gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
That's right! I am the not-so-sparkly Sasha Kaplan, because I do not sparkle, and I am allergic to glitter in every way, shape, and form. But also here is my producer, Michael Lindenbaum.
So you're not a, like one of those Twilight vampires?
No, I'm allergic to, I'm actually allergic to vampires. I'm vampire intolerant. Can't process vampires. I don't know what it is. But anyway, we have come to the end of a trilogy. It is an amazing end of an amazing trilogy, and there will be no other X-Men films until X-Men First Class is relaunched, of course. So that's it. No other movies. Just, you know, we have a nice gap between movies after X3 before we get into the specifics of X-Men First Class. And that'll kind of reboot the entire franchise. And yeah, you know, solid break.
Except it doesn't really reboot the franchise.
It kind of has. It sort of reboots it. It sort of doesn't, but it kind of has to. Because
the thing that actually really reboots the entire franchise is actually Days of Future Past.
Except the thing is that X-Men First Class doesn't follow the canon that was established in the original X-Men trilogy in relation to Charles and Eric. The only thing that was consistent was the Holocaust scene, sort of.
Was it though?
So,
what was it though?
Sort of. Because the beginning of it was. The beginning of it was.
Because the beginning of X3, you have Charles and Eric going to meet Jean Grey.
Yeah, which doesn't happen.
But no, let me finish. Which they made it known that after a while, they actually stopped visiting the mutants. But for whatever reason, according to Charles, visiting Jean in X3 to start the film was a very special case.
Actually, no. What happens is, no. At the beginning of this movie, Eric asks Charles, do we have to visit all of them? And Charles says, no, because this is when they're actually starting the school. Whereas in the X-Men First Class, the school is established by the time Eric is no longer there. Therefore, they never meet Jean Grey. So the canonicity of X-Men First Class is a softcore reboot. I'm sorry, it is. It does not line up with the timeline. And it also doesn't line up in the timeline because of Moira McTaggart. Because Moira McTaggart is in this movie.
Yeah, a little bit.
Is she a CIA operative? No, she is not.
Yeah, well, let's also be honest, when we do X-Men Origins, Wolverine in the next episode, Deadpool has his mouth sewn shut. So,
yeah. So why is that a problem of rebooting the franchise? Like, you should thank me.
But the thing is that the real reboot and even everyone who's been like a producer, Kevin Feige,
Feige.
No, really, Feige's a producer for X-Men.
I know,
because the original X-Men. Where is it? The original X-Men trilogy, the original Spider-Man trilogy, Daredevil, 2003 Hulk, 2004 Punisher, 2004...
Do you really want to be associated with those movies? But okay, continue.
Blade Trinity.
Yes, get to the point.
Elektra. Fantastic Four movies. We're all part of Marvel Entertainment when they were still working with other studios before they started going off on their own with Iron Man. But Feige's first ever movie though was X-Men. They overly admitted that, like, yeah, when they did Days of Future Past, that was their way of kind of doing the reboot and resetting the timeline, because that way it made stuff like Deadpool make sense, and they did the alternate universe.
Okay, I get all of that, really, I do, except when we get to First Class, we realize that, like, the shit that was set up in these last three movies is basically canceled. So the way that things are set up in X-Men First Class, it nullifies certain things from these flashbacks of younger Charles and Eric. So let's get into this.
All right.
And I'm sorry. What was that movie you mentioned again that we have to review? I've never heard of it. After X-Men, after this, that's not a thing.
Yeah, it is.
That's not a thing.
I mean, no, it's not. Especially with how much fun they make at it in later movies. Come on.
All right.
That end scene in Deadpool 2 when he gets Cable's time porter working and he goes back and he kills himself in X-Men Origins and he just looks at Wolverine and Wolverine just has this dumb look on his face. Come on. They poke so much fun at it.
So here's an interesting fact before we get to this movie. Bryan Singer declined to direct this movie in favor of, get this, Superman Returns.
Yeah, we touched on that in the last episode.
It's still funny. I can't get over how funny that is.
Brett Ratner took on the reins for this one.
Yes, he did. And there's a couple of things that happened with this movie. One being they rewrote several scripts. And they ended up adapting. They ended up shoving two stories in one. They loosely took Chris Claremont's Phoenix run, and smacked it with I think it's an Astonishing X-Men run, which talks about like a cure for mutants that was written by Joss Whedon actually. All right, so let's get into this, shall we? There's a lot of things that got shoved in here that, like, I'll talk about as we get to those points that was kind of unnecessary because parts of this movie are unnecessary, but all right, let's get into this. So Ratner was the third director. First it was Singer who said no. Then it was Matthew Vaughn who said no.
And of course, we know what Matthew Vaughn went on to do. The Kingsman movies?
Right, yes, which are awesome. But anyway, he dropped out because of family issues and because of Fox trying to rush production. So there's a lot of things happening against this movie already. So let's get into this. We actually see the Marvel logo. As a car pulls up in front of the gray house, and a young-looking Charles and Eric step out from 20 years ago. They're here to recruit...
Which might I add, the de-aging technology they used back in 2005 when they made the movie is nowhere as good as it was now.
Well, yeah, but they did their best. It looks a little plasticky, but like, it's okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, they arrive to, this is Jean's house, to take her, they want to take her to the school. And basically they give the parents the spiel about the school and they're like, oh... Well, this, like, Jean is very powerful. We see this. This was never previously mentioned, really, of, like, how Jean is so powerful. We sort of got hints of it in the last movie, but in the first movie, they mentioned specifically that she's really not powerful, and we're not really given much of an explanation about why that is. We get one now, but I think because this was, like, a rush job and because it was kind of, like, a different take and different director, they didn't keep some of the consistency that would have been nice to keep in the previous films. So we have a Claremont and Lee cameo. They are the two people in the neighborhood where Jean like lifts all the cars. Anyway, we flash forward 10 years ago when a young itty bitty teeny weeny little blonde Ward Worthington III is trying to scrape his wings off. And it's like really painful to watch this poor kid. And, like, his dad walks in. He's like, oh, God, Warren. And, oh, I feel so bad for this child. He's so adorable. Fun fact, this kid went on to play the lead in Sharkboy and Lava Girl, a movie that nobody remembers. But, yeah. Anyway, so we see some lab work and a plot to destroy the future. Peter saves, basically it's like a dystopian future kind of a situation. The credits roll into this kind of lab work thing, but we see there's like this weird, it's unclear, but there's like some kind of dangerous situation that the team is in. We see Peter who saves Rogue, and Logan is like completely unaffected by the danger. I think he like lits a cigar off of something that's on fire. Kitty hugs Bobby to make him intangible. Logan tells Storm that they're not ready. And they fight a Sentinel. But I gotta give them credit. I actually really like this opening scene because first of all, we get the fastball special where Peter just like throws Logan at the Sentinel, but we don't actually see the Sentinel. We actually just see this like looming figure in the smoke. And then the next thing we see is Logan being thrown at it. And then we see the helmet. I'm like, oh, it's a Sentinel. And that's actually kind of cool. Except the issue I have is they never establish what Sentinels were and why this would be something the kids need to train to fight. So this
I would call it foreshadowing.
Sure, if you squint. But now it's foreshadowing. Back then it was just random.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely then it's random. But if you look at it now, like, they ended up using this movie to do a lot of foreshadowing into the future. Like,
well, again, it wasn't purposeful. It just kind of happened that way because when they made Days of Future Past, they used... Anyway.
Well, it's not just that movie that's affected. There's a bunch of the movies are affected.
We'll get to them when we get to them. Rewind back to X-Men The Last Stand. So Logan is apparently just subbing in because Scott is, you know, dealing with the loss of Jean. And apparently he's also hallucinating Jean's voice. He should talk to somebody about that. Rogue is still having issues with her powers and wanting to be with Bobby. And meanwhile, there's a new president. Guess the last guy lost the election. And Scott is leaving. And then he and Wolverine still have issues together. They still don't get along. Logan was kind of just passing through and then got sucked in to like help out. So apparently there's now a Department of Mutant Affairs and Hank McCoy in his blue and fuzziness is heading it. And he's hanging upside down and reading. He gets called to meet with the president in the Situation Room. What is the situation? The hunt for Magneto is on and they have apprehended Mystique. They found her breaking into the FDA lab. She's been imitating the secretary, Secretary Trask. Trask. Let that name sink in. All right. So, where was I? Secretary Trask thinks that he can hold her in some new prisons that they have. And Hank's like, I'm not so sure. We see Mystique being interrogated, and the interrogator calls her Raven, and she calls that her slave name. And he's like, well, what about your family? That's the name your family gave you. And she looks at him like, my family tried to kill me, you pathetic meat sack. I'm like, yeah, that's Raven for you. And Mystique is basically having fun with toying with him. And she like turns into the interrogator and everything like that. It's actually really funny. And she puts him in a chokehold and like, it's just funny. She's like, she doesn't care. So the president brought Hank into the room, not to show him about Mystique, but about what Mystique tried to steal, which is information on a cure or a kid who is related to the cure. And Beast is all like, this is going to be a really sensitive issue. Like, you want me to help you with this? But Worthington Labs is the one that is behind this cure. And they've turned Alcatraz, that infamous prison, into a laboratory. Meanwhile, Charles is teaching students about powers and uses. It's an ethics class. Oh, excuse me, mutant ethics. And there's a girl with like good note-taking skills. She's just like holding her hand over the like page and like the notes appear. It's kind of cool, actually. Oh, and the twitchy eye kid from the previous movie is in this. The one that kept changing the TV channels.
Oh yeah, because he's actually asked to turn on the TV.
Yep. So they talk about like the idea of like, what if you project somebody else's consciousness into the body of a person that is in a coma and things like that? And like, is that morally like the morality of like powers and things like that? Kitty quotes Einstein, and I gotta say, was this supposed to be a hint or something? Because not gonna lie, that's kind of a dumbass hint. In case people don't know, Kitty Pryde is Jewish. Yeah, so anyway, like there's nothing wrong with a Jewish person quoting Einstein, but it's just kind of funny because literally we never, ever, 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 ever in any of the other movies will ever hear them any relation between Kitty and Jewishness. Literally never mentioned.
That's because the next time we see Kitty Pryde is not until Days of Future Past.
I don't care. I don't. Like, they spent so much time in X-Men First Class talking about how Magneto was a Holocaust survivor and beating up Nazis. But in the dark and desperate future, you can't have one conversation between Magneto and Kitty. Like, fudge that. Fudge that. All right, so let's see. Then we see some storm clouds. And Charles dismisses the class and goes to talk to Storm. Charles is like, forecast calls for sunny skies. What's wrong? And Storm is, I guess, kind of, they never really explain what's going on with Storm, really. She's just, like, worried about everybody, I guess. So Magneto is a fugitive mutant and there's a mutant in the cabinet and the president who understands them, yet they still hide. So that is kind of where she is, I guess. She's wondering, like, why are they hiding when there's, like, a president that understands them and there's a mutant in the cabinet and everything should be hunky-dory now. And I guess Hank and Storm know each other from something. I mean, I guess there's kind of like a time jump because everybody looks a little bit older between the other movies. But I'm not really given an so obviously something happened in those in-between years, but I got nothing.
Well, not also, like that, like, but one of the lines that Charles uses on Storm is that Storm is like, you can't have everyone be your students forever. And Charles goes, I haven't viewed you as my student in a very long time, which kind of also gives you the hint that, like, when they do the reunion with Hank, that Hank himself used to be a student of the school along with Storm.
Yeah, that's a stretch, but sure, I'll give it to you.
It kind of, like, gives that allusion to that. And I say allusion with an E, not with an I.
Yeah. So Storm, basically Storm is a student and Charles wants her to take over and she goes, but Scott. And, so I have here in my notes, he's useless, but Charles says he's a changed man. I'm going to go with useless. Storm notes Charles is keeping something away. Beast and Storm have their little reunion. Hank has arrived with the news. Logan's there. He likes Logan just like likes pissing everybody off. That's his natural state. Beast tells him about the cure, but it's also being broadcast on TV at the same time. Something to note, Halle Berry has chemistry with everybody in this movie. Like, holy fudge brownies. She has chemistry with Kelsey Grammer's Hank. She has chemistry with Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. Like, there's even, like, these, like, nice kind of fatherly-daughterly relationship that she has with Charles that I could see. Like, Halle Berry's just amazing.
Halle Berry's always been a really good actress, but also at the same time, I mean, not including Kelsey Grammer's Hank, but specifically more with Hugh's Wolverine and Patrick's Charles Xavier, this is now their third movie together, so they have built up that chemistry over,
like,
over the
timeline. To be honest, I really wish this movie had been more about everybody moving on from Jean and dealing with the repercussions of the cure than about Jean, because honestly, Logan getting together with Storm would have been way cooler. And I'm not just saying that because there's one alternative future from the X-Men the Animated Series where that happened. But anyway, I have my preferences. So Storm is upset by the announcement of the cure. Worthington calls being a mutant a disease that needs to be cured, obviously. And Storm asks what kind of a mutant would take the cure. Hank gets all philosophical about, is it like a cowardly to, you know, keep making yourself safe from persecution and whatnot and about fitting in. Logan wonders if the government was involved, and Hank has been fighting for mutant rights since apparently before Logan had claws, which is not factually possible, but I get the point. Rogue comes in excited. Storm says, like, oh, they can cure us, which has, like, been memed so many times. And Storm says no, because there's nothing to cure, because there's nothing wrong with any of them. And I know people have kind of talked about kind of where Storm is coming from, like, mutant privilege of having powers that make her passable as a mutant. But Hank also makes that point earlier of, like, not everybody can fit in as easily as you can. And so I think if we had gotten more background on Storm, and this is something I mentioned, I think when we reviewed the first X-Men movies, this would have made a little bit more sense. Whereas, like, Storm is an orphan. And this is, through being a mutant, she's found a home and a community and a family. And the notion of losing that is like can be really scary. So I can kind of understand where Storm is coming from. So Storm does not quote unquote get called out, but her like place in the scheme of things is acknowledged. That she can pass quote unquote for a human. But I think there is a point that Storm makes in here that is important, that there is nothing to cure, that like being a mutant is not a disease. It is not a bad thing. It is just something you're born with. And that's not to say that there aren't mutants that could benefit from a cure. Having read a plethora of X-Men comics, there's some mutants with really dumb powers. And really pointless powers. Like there's one kid that can blow himself up and he gets blown up. That's it. He's dead. Like I remember it's from like the worst X-Men comic or something. And so I get that. And I wish that the writing had been more consistent, because what would have been better, I think personally, is like from going from X2 to X3 is if Rogue actually voluntarily chose not to take the cure. And we'll get to that later, why. But remind me to talk about why I think Rogue shouldn't have taken the cure. So well, anyway,
I have a thing on that anyways.
So, all right, so we'll get into it when we get to the end. So there's a community action meeting where no humans are allowed. There's a sign. And they talk about mutant response. And the guy's like, we need to form a committee to take our concerns to the right people who can take our concerns for the government. And I just pictured that scene in SpongeBob the Musical, where the mayor of the town is like, we need to form a committee to just make a decision, to put forth a referendum. And it just goes on and on and on and on.
Who knows? Maybe that's what SpongeBob was parroting.
No, but anyway. So Toad has some seriously bad CGI on him. It's a different Toad. I wish they'd gotten that actor back or just not use the character. Or I don't even know what character that was supposed to be. But anyway. And then Magneto comes in and he's like, nobody ever talks about extermination. They just do it. And there's like a question of like, is this a voluntary cure and how long it will be voluntary for? So Magneto walks in very like poetically with Pyro and he's got a cape. And Eric says the cure will be forced and rallies. He kind of has a rallying cry for an army or, you know, basically join my army or wait to be victims of a genocide. And like joined the Brotherhood. I'm like, haha, I see what you did there. So a few mutants approach him. They've got some tattoos. One asks if like he's one, which is, I guess her name is Callisto. If this is supposed to be a nod at Callisto from the comics, let me tell you, no. No on so many levels. Like Callisto from the comics has like an eye patch and she has like she's like her face is scarred and like come on.
Yeah, that's Danya Ramirez played Callisto.
I refuse to call her that. We're just gonna call her the woo girl or whatever. The speedy one. Because that I can't. Anyway. So the girl, the woman, asks, if you're one of us, where's your mark? As all of the mutants in the room are, like, tattooed. And he's like, I have a mark. And he just, like, reveals the numbers on his arm. And they're just so haunting. And he's like, no other needle will ever pierce my skin. Ha! Foreshadowing! Very bad foreshadowing, but I get it. There's a porcupine guy. He just, like, has spikiness. We're just gonna call him Porcupine Guy. I'm sure he has a name, because I know the actor, but... anyway, so the woman has speed, and she also knows she can sense other mutants and their powers. So she knows that there were, like, however many mutants in the room, none above a class 3 except Eric and Pyro. And she knows what their powers are. So they want her help locating a specific mutant. Meanwhile, in a police prison transport, Mystique is trying very hard to get out. And there's this scene where she's like chained up and she turns into a little girl to try to gain some sympathy. And the guard is like, I'll like mace you. Girl, that girl scared the crap out of me. She just looks so like homicidal. Like kudos to this young actress because that was so good. Like, whoo, I hope whoever she is, she has a really good career. I don't think I've seen her in anything, but wow, that was really jarring. Like
let me look it up real quick.
Meanwhile, But again, this is basically a waste of Mystique. There's a really lack of build up to her. And I think it had to do with, like, I think James Marsden and Rebecca Romijn actually had, like, scheduling conflict or something, or they had other projects going on or something was happening, so the roles had to be reduced. And I guess my question was just, like, why then waste the time with them? You could have, like, just not included them. Like, maybe Mystique was on another mission to secure funding, or maybe she had to be, like, undercover somewhere else, or, like, you know, Scott could have just died. Or, like, gone off to find himself.
The little girl was Mackenzie Vega, and she played 11-year-old Nancy in the Sin City movie.
Never seen that.
I know exactly which story in Sin City she was in. She was in the one that involved Jessica Alba and Bruce Willis.
Great.
She was actually really good in that. Not a whole lot of actual known stuff, though.
Aw, that's unfortunate.
She did The Good Wife, which is a TV show. She's done a lot of TV movies, like Pretty Little Dead Girl, The Beach House, Tomboy, and Love, of course. Apparently she's going to be in a film called Exploited, which is completed, and she's in pre-production for a film called Growing Up Gorman. So she really hasn't done a lot. The big things is that outside of X-Men, The Last Stand, she's done Sin City and The Good Wife.
That's really unfortunate, because I really liked her in this scene. She just looks so like my dad. Like, it was kind of like my daddy's going to come in and murder you kind of a look, and it was just so amazing. Anyway, where were we? Alcatraz. Hank arrives at Alcatraz to meet with this kid, and he meets the lead scientist on the project. So Jimmy, that's his name, has a very specific range to his powers, and he sees his hand change as he approaches the kid and has kind of like this, like, holy fudge brownies, I have a normal hand. And so the lab can't regenerate, they can't reproduce the cure without the kid's DNA. They can't reform the DNA or whatever, or like the cure, the X gene from him, to mass produce the cure without the kid. So kid is basically a lab monkey. I kind of feel bad for him. Anyway, so Scott goes out for a bike ride and ends up on Alkaline Lake. He has like the schmucky looking, he's like kind of schmucky looking. That's what I have here. He's schmucky looking. And there's like, he hears Jean's voice and he releases his powers into the water, and then something in the water starts bubbling and there's a blast and it knocks him back, and there's Jean alive with longer hair and and she's kind of colder, and she wants to see his eyes and to trust her. She can control it now. He can't hurt her. And so he opens his eyes and they're normal and they make out, and then something, and then like, it kind of looks like she's sucking his soul out a little bit. And then something reaches Charles. Storm and Logan go to the lake and they see like shit is floating around, like rocks and things, and they find Scott's glasses.
Well, Wolverine found Scott's glasses. Storm didn't.
One of them found. Yeah, whatever. So let's see.
Storm found finds Jean.
There we go.
Yeah.
There's like a cocoon. She's like in some kind of cocoon of telekinetic energy. And Jean is the only class 5 mutant Charles has ever seen. And he had to put like psychic barriers on Jean to, I guess, help her control her powers. And I guess like eventually he was gonna like remove them when she gained control. But as a result of the psychic barriers that he put in to like keep Jean from destroying herself, this second personality ended up showing up, calling itself the Phoenix. So the Phoenix is basically all disaster and destruction. Like if there's joy, it's rage. It's unclear like what Jean knows about the Phoenix, or whether or not this is Jean or the Phoenix. And so Charles is trying to like build those barriers back up and says that Jean needs to be controlled. And I get what Charles is saying, but that was a very poor choice of words, because it sets Logan off about like, oh, you're just like, you're bad and blah, 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 blah. So I don't think Logan fully understands the implications of like what Jean is capable of. And Charles doesn't really do a good job of explaining it. Jean is extremely powerful and dangerous, and like the lesser of two evils is to put these psychic barriers on her. Logan says he's disappointed in Charles. I'm like, girl, you have not spent enough time at the school to be disappointed in Charles. But everybody should be disappointed in Charles. So the mutant cure, salvation or eradication? That is the question, because there are protests. And there's like people chanting, we don't need a cure. Back at Warrington Labs, Warren Worthington III, Warren Worthington II is pushing Warren Worthington III to take the cure. And like they strap him in to, comes in with like this brown coat that's covering up his wings, which are like in a harness type of thing. And they like strap him in. And the scientist lady's like, oh, the transformation can be very jarring. And Warren is like, Dad, I don't know if I can do this. And his dad's like, yeah, don't worry, it'll be fine. And Warren's like, nope, I don't want to do this. And so he gets out of the way and like releases the wings and like flies away and like blasts through the window. Fun fact though, the actor is actually scared of heights. So interesting casting choice.
And not only that, but the actor who is named Ben Foster. Yes, Ben Foster, great actor.
Great actor.
He actually, the first real film that he actually got his big start in was actually The Punisher with Thomas Jane. He actually played Spacker Dave in that film, but then he has also gone on to do Alpha Dog, 310 to Yuma as Charlie Prince. He is so good in that. 30 Days of Night as The Stranger. He is creepy as hell in that movie.
He's great. I'm glad he has a career that's good.
Also done Mechanic and a whole bunch of other things. He's actually one of those actors that actually, even though he has very little screen time in this, really he ended up having a really good career for himself.
That's good because he's absolutely wasted in this movie. Like, I get the side plot. This is the problem. If you cut away Gene, you have enough room to actually develop this into a really good movie. Like, imagine if the government is actually trying to cure mutants. And Warren, because his dad hates mutants and thinks they're a disease, finds out about this kid and the cure, and then goes to the X-Men, like, after his dad tries to test the cure on him. Like, that would have been so much more interesting.
Now imagine also studios not changing and forcing directors to cut out stuff out of their films.
That too. Wait, we'll get to what was cut out of this film. But anyway.
Well, that also talks about like other stuff that's being done currently right now.
Yes, obviously. Let's see. So back at the prison transport, we have Magneto casually like crashes cars and Mystique kills a guard and tells Magneto about the child. So welcome to Cameo Land. So there's a couple of other prisoners that we didn't see. In their first scene in the transport. The first is Jamie Madrox, which is a waste of Jamie Madrox. But anyway, this Jamie robbed 7 banks at the exact same time. Ha 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 ha. Don't we see him in like maybe 2 other scenes? He's not that important.
Well, we see him in a scene where he's following Callisto and Pyro and Magneto as they're having a conversation.
Yes.
Because he kind of becomes one of the main part of that group. But then the last time we see him, which is later in the film, which is when they use him as the distraction so they can all go to Alcatraz, and he kind of suckers in the government.
Yeah, and then he just ends up being put back in prison. So it's kind of like a waste of a character. But anyway. There's a confined prisoner who needs to be confined at all times. It's Juggernaut!
Played by Vinnie Jones.
Dude, he really makes this role everything. Like, he's a blast in this movie.
That's the thing about Vinnie Jones in general. He has that type of personality as a person to make those type of characters actually work.
This is true. So Pyro makes a crack about his helmet, and he's like, keeps my face pretty. And I was like, yeah, all right, we'll go with that. So Mystique, basically one of the guards that Mystique had knocked out or somebody had knocked out is still alive, and he like shoots Magneto. He shoots the cure at Magneto, but Mystique like uses herself as a human shield. Human shield, get it? Because she becomes human. And the transformation is basically like dark hair Rebecca Romijn. And Magneto's like, and she's like, help me. And he's like, well, you're not really one of us anymore. And Magneto walks out and he's like, it's such a shame. She was so beautiful. I'm like, oh, that's going to come back to bite you, isn't it? Let's see. The cure has been moved, has been turned into a weapon, which is what happens in the news of this kind of gets to the president and to Hank. And Hank resigns actually in protest because he's not like being consulted and things are happening about mutants like without his input when he's supposed to be the Secretary of Mutant Affairs. So they're basically going behind his back and they've turned the cure into a weapon. And the president's like, that was a one-time thing. I'm like, girl, no, it's not. No, it's not. Hank chooses people over politics. And even though the president was like, there's so much you can do here and we need you. And Hank's like, I'm out.
He just Logan goes, deuces, I'm out. I know where I need to be.
Yeah, pretty much. So Logan watches over Jean and she wakes up, but it's very clearly not Jean. Like, the actress who plays Jean did such an amazing job of a really poorly written character. And you see the change. I think partially it's because I watched the first, like I watched, you know, we watched the second movie last week. And then the week before that, we watched the first one and whatnot. But with this, you can really tell the acting choices differences. Like she's darker, she's colder, her eyes are darker. Like it's not just makeup. It's like the like Famke acting Jansen. Choices that Famke makes. And she's such a great actress. She does such a good job with this.
Yeah.
So anyway,
the full name is Famke Jensen.
Yes. So she is not. So this is not Jean. She's just like creepy, and they make out, and like Jean is like scratching him, and I'm like, ew, ew, ew. Just get it over. Just ew, ew, ew. Logan realizes that this is not actually Jean, but she doesn't really care, and just like takes his belt off with her mind, and I'm like, all right, I still don't want to see this. So the Phoenix tries to get it on with Logan. The Phoenix thinks Charles is in her head or is in all of their heads. Scott, so Logan mentions like, what happened to Scott? Where's Scott? And that kind of triggers Jean back. So the Phoenix killed him and she's losing control. Jean is losing control and begs Logan to kill her. I wonder if that'll be an important plot point. And then the Phoenix knocks him out. So the cure has been placed in a gun and Magneto and Pyro are... Something mentioned, like, this is the lightning rod. So, electromagnetic force, and Magneto, like, knows it's Jean. He, like, feels it. Because, the mutant lady tells him. So, Storm finds Logan, and Logan says that Jean killed Scott, and then they arrive to her old house at the same time as Magneto comes to talk to Jean alone, which is, like, a nice parallel from the first scene, yada, yada, yada. Charles and Eric go in, but Charles tells Juggernaut that nobody else gets in. And because they need to, so they go to talk to Jean alone. Jean is not well, like she's not well. And Charles kind of sounds like a parent. And she's having some control issues very clearly. And Eric isn't helping. Like Charles's choice of words are very poor, but Eric is also kind of egging Jean on. Like he wants to control you yada, yada, yada.
It's your classic protagonist antagonist play.
Yes. So Jean keeps getting angrier and angrier, and finally Magneto gets, like, pushed back by the force of her mind, and then Storm and Jean try to go in, but Storm and Callisto end up fighting, Callisto ends up kind of walking all over her, Charles and Jean have, like, a mutant mind meld game that is, like, interestingly illustrated. Eric seems to be unable to do anything as she slowly kills Charles, and Eric gets to watch. Charles explodes and the house falls. And Logan gets to see all of this. Perfect timing. Eric takes Jean with them. Storm and Logan grieve for the professor. There's a funeral. Moira McTaggart is there. And Logan does not actually attend the funeral. He's just watching from the sidelines. And then you see the kids mourning. Next we cut to, so there's like a scene where Bobby's sitting between Rogue and Kitty. And then the next scene is Kitty's crying and Bobby comes in to check on her. So Charles was the one that convinced all of them to come to school. They talked with their parents, yada, yada, yada. Kitty says that she's grieving, but she's kind of missing home and missing snow, and Bobby sees the ice skates. So Kitty and Bobby have a romantic, totally platonic ice skating date. Honestly, Kitty's character so far is, like, bland. Like, Bobby had more of a personality in the first X-Men movie, I think. No, that's a bit extreme, but, like, I don't know. She's just, like, generic kid character. Like, she's there. 90% of this is her just being fodder for the Rogue, Bobby, and Kitty love triangle. Because what this franchise really needed was more love triangles. But anyway, so Rogue watches all of this from the window and decides to leave. Logan tries to quote-unquote stop her, but not in a, like, you can't do this sort of way. More of like a, I'm your friend, don't do this over a boy kind of way. And then Rogue finally tells us that her name is Marie. So she leaves. Meanwhile, in the woods, there's a mutant stronghold in Brotherhood. And Magneto shows Jean the cure. And she almost uses it on him. But he doesn't want to control her. He wants her to be as nature intended and wants her to destroy the cure. Callisto says Jean is unstable. No kidding! Pyro would have killed... So there's a moment where Pyro was like, he says that he would have killed Charles if Magneto had given him the chance. And Magneto actually defends Charles, which is which I think gets to what these movies never really explored, which was Magneto's philosophy for mutants, not necessarily Magneto's philosophy for humans, which is the fact that both Charles and Eric, and this is something the other trilogy does better, and I say trilogy for a reason.
Well, it's a series of trilogies.
Anyway, yeah. But anyway, the point being that, like, Eric has bad methods to mutant protection. At the crust of it, Eric and Charles want the same thing. They just wanted it really different ways. Mutant safety, mutant sovereignty, mutant independence. All right. So let's see. So Eric defends Charles, which was a very nice touch. Meanwhile, Bobby wants to know what's next. Are they closing the school? And Hank actually kind of advocates for closing the school. They're like, oh, this dream began with Charles. Maybe it should end with him. And Storm's like, nope, school's not closing. But that's partially done because Warren shows up at like the perfect moment. It's like, I heard this was a safe place for mutants. And Storm says, yes, it is. And we're not closing. Bobby learns from Peter that Rogue took off. Peter actually has lines in this movie. Peter's so underused in both of these franchises. It's so sad. Anyway, Bobby wants to know what's next. We're past this. So Logan hears Jean in his head and it hurts, but he gets a location. He goes after her. He really should have gotten together with Storm. They have better chemistry. That is a note I have. So Logan leaves, there's protests. Bobby goes looking for Rogue in the line of people waiting. He's in the protest crowd and Pyro shows up. And Pyro kind of eggs him on to use his powers, but Bobby leaves and Pyro torches the cure place. Magneto actually gives a statement to the world, which is actually something he's done in a couple of different comics, including House of M, interestingly enough, or House of M Civil War, I should say. But point being, join or stay out of our way is basically the message, particularly to the mutants. So they have to stop Magneto, Trask. Oh, this is interesting. So they have to stop Magneto, right? So they need new weapons. So they actually show the military giving it up all of the metal that they have in favor of plastic weapons.
With the legendary Arlie Ermey directing the orders out to all of the military.
Let's see.
It's a shame we didn't get to see him direct those orders out to everybody, but at least we got to hear him.
So Rogue arrives to get in line for the cure. Logan arrives at the campsite and is stabbed by some knife guy. Like, literally, the dude has knives coming out of his body. It's kind of gross.
Those aren't knives. Those are, like,
bone really sharp shards.
Bones.
They have a tip. They have, like, a handle. It was weird.
Exactly. They're really sharp bones.
Wolverine kicks butt, stabs the bone guy, knife guy, whatever. So Magneto rallies the troops and that they're going to take the cure, destroy the source, and use it on those that basically they're going to use the cure on mutants that don't fall in line with their rhetoric. All right. So Logan finds Jean, but before he can do anything, Magneto says hello because, you know, Logan is made of metal. He always forgets that he should never go up against Magneto. If there's one person he should never fight, it's Magneto. Like, seriously.
Eric, there's a nice little payoff a little later, though.
Yes. So Eric sends Logan packing. Meanwhile, the president talks about how they found Magneto's base of operations and because Mystique told them everything and turned everything over to the feds. So the feds go in, but it's just Jamie Madrox acting as the decoy. Meanwhile, on Alcatraz. I take it back. They go to Alcatraz. Logan comes back to school and needs help. Storm and Hank are ready to go. And then Six against an army because the kids are coming too. And Peter. Logan gives a very blasé but powerful speech about how, you know, it's going to take all of them. They get on the plane. Let's see. So we flash to the Golden Gate Bridge. There's cars, and then the bridge starts to kind of collapse, and people think it's an earthquake. So they abandon their cars, those who can, because there's one family that's, like, trapped in between cars. But it's actually Magneto, and he, like, takes a part of the bridge and redirects it to Alcatraz. Like, that is creepy and amazing and incredibly powerful.
And one of the greatest parts about this scene is as Magneto and his army are walking over to Alcatraz, you see that minivan again, and he looks back at them, and the mother just locks the doors, and he just turns back around smiling.
Magneto locks the door, not the mom.
No, she does.
No, Magneto does, because she looks shocked when the doors lock.
Oh, it looked like she did it, though.
I'm pretty sure it was Magneto, because he got a smirk. It's like, you're not getting out.
Not like they're going to get out anyways with the cars trapped, you know, it's like...
Anyway, so mutants descend on the island. The pawns go first, as Magneto says. Magneto realizes that the guns are plastic, and it's kind of cool how he'll use the metal around him to, like, shield himself from the plastic cure weapons. So Shockwave took care of the weapons. This is the first time she's named and she has no lines, but okay.
Well, according to the credits, she is not called Shockwave.
What is she called?
She is called, where is it again? I passed it. She is called Arclight.
Whatever.
And also the Toad guy is not Toad guy, he is Lizard Man.
Oh, wow, Lizard Man. Oh, my God. What a huge difference.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, she goes by the name of Arclight, and the other woman that's with her when they go grab Warren Worthington is Psylocke.
Yeah, I caught the purple hair. It wasn't subtle, except she also has no lines and no use. Yeah. This is what I call the useless cameo. And this is something I'm going to talk about when we talk about Old Man Logan, where, like, that it's just like a random taking of characters and shoving them in a movie without any forethought to those characters. Fight me, I'm annoyed.
Well, part of that is also the fact that there came a point between Fox and Marvel, because apparently with the X-Men, Fox can utilize any character that has been in the comics, which is why for the longest time, Marvel actually put out a mandate to stop creating new X-Men characters. Because if they create a new X-Men character in the comics, that gives Fox the right to use them.
You know, that explains M-Day. But anyway.
Yeah, so it was one of those weird things. But now that Fox is under the Disney banner, it doesn't matter anymore.
Thank God, honestly. All right. So, no reinforcements from the government, because, you know, governments are so useful, especially in comics. Storm brings in the lightning. Peter fights something, and they establish a line. So, Storm beats up Callisto. Kitty gets a moment of, like, just being badass. But then Juggernaut goes after the boy, and Kitty follows. Kitty actually, like, they do a pretty decent job with her powers where, like, she traps Juggernaut inside the floor. It doesn't hold him for long, but it's funny.
Because
and he's like, who are
Juggernaut,
you?
Juggernaut, bitch.
Yes. So then Warren Worthington II and the Doctor are like, oh crap, we're gonna get attacked. And Spiky Boy shows up, and so do the other girls, and they take Warren Worthington II, and then they kill the Doctor. Kitty gets to the boy, but she can't phase because, you know, he's a cure. He nullifies all powers. But Kitty is a really smart character. I wish she'd really gotten more time to shine, because she realizes this, and her first reaction isn't to panic, oh my god, how are we going to fight Juggernaut? Her reaction is, if I can't use my powers, neither can he. So she ducks him, ducks and the kid, at the two of them duck at the exact same moment, and Juggernaut hits the wall and gets knocked out. Bravo, Kitty. Magneto and Pyro start shooting flaming cars at everything right after Callisto gets electrocuted by Storm. Warren Worthington II gets thrown off a building and gets saved by his son. So Storm, Logan, and Hank see a cure cartridge and decide teamwork is their best bet. But first they have to get rid of Pyro. This is where Bobby comes in. So Storm brings some fog. There's a fire versus ice battle where it actually kind of looks like Pyro's going to lose. And he's like, you should have, like, left.
No, Pyro is going to win.
Yeah, sorry. It looks like Pyro's going to win. And Bobby gets full Iceman and kicks his ass. And it's a nice line about, like, you should have stayed in school, which is funny. So they do the fastball special, but it's meant for a strike. And so Wolverine gets flung at Magneto. And Magneto's like, don't you, like, you never learn. And Magneto's like, oh, no. And it's very clear that Logan is the distraction, because the next thing that happens is Hank stabs Magneto with the cure.
Yeah, it was a great back and forth between Magneto and Wolverine, where it's like, Magneto's like, you just never learn, do you? And Wolverine is, like, laying on his back going, oh, no, I've learned.
I've learned. Magneto talks to Phoenix, and he's like, this is what they want for all of us. And Logan says it's over, their reinforcements arrive, but that sets Jean off. She vaporizes them. She doesn't just destroy them, she literally vaporizes them. I see now where Marvel got the idea about Thanos and the snap. But that's a joke, I know. So she starts kind of disintegrating everything around them. Like, this is M-Day before M-Day. Because she's essentially disintegrating everybody and everything, including the mutants. But Kitty has the boy, and Bobby helps. Eric realizes that he was wrong. And it's all up to Logan, who, like, tells everybody to get back because the Brotherhood's destroyed. And his healing factor allows, like, his clothes get destroyed because apparently we really need another shot of, like, a naked and or shirtless, like, Hugh Jackman.
Well, he kind of kept his pants, you know.
Not really, no. But anyway, so he gets close enough to Jean finally, and she's crying and kill me. So Logan finally stabs her. Finally. And she dies. Hallelujah, it's over. This is the other part. Logan's like, I love you. I'm like, girl, you were not in love with Jean. We have shown no actual reason why he would be in love with Jean, or anything that actually shows he's anything but lusting after Jean. I'm sorry. I fully believe Wolverine is capable of love. Don't get me wrong. But there's no indication here that there's ever been any indication that anything that he feels for Jean is anything beyond just lust. Sure, he's not a complete jerk that, like, he would do anything, like, he doesn't really mess with the relationship that Jean has with Scott, but Jean also doesn't really help because she sort of flirts with Logan on a couple occasions. But anyway, I don't believe Logan was actually in love with Jean. I'm sorry. Actually, you know what? I'm not sorry. So anyway, let's get to, Logan cries about it. So at the funeral for Jean and Scott, Kitty's there, I guess. She's like, they have, like, their grave side by side, and Kitty's just, like, awkwardly staring at them. Storm 2, and then the next thing we see that Rogue has returned, and she apologizes, but it's what she wanted. And we see that school is back in session, and that kid that they rescued, Jimmy, actually arrives for the new term and, like, hugs Storm, and it's so cute. And so Hank gets appointed UN ambassador and, like, mutant extraordinaire at the end of the movie. and a lonely man named Eric Lencher plays chess by himself.
Well, no, before this, you see the thing with Hank on the TV, and Logan's like, good job, Furball. Yep. And then he walks out, and then they do this really beautiful zoom out. That's where the credit should have started. Right there. That's where the credit roll should have began. Because that was the best way to end it. But instead they do this.
Yeah, so they do that. This really should have been like an after credit scene. But anyway, so there's a lonely man that plays chess by himself, and like the metal chess piece moves, and it's Magneto. So the post-credit scene is apparently Moira MacTaggert checking on a patient and hearing Eric's voice, Charles's voice, which was, that part was stupid and unnecessary. So look.
Well, here's the thing, but, though. On both of those points, one, going on Magneto, it proves that whatever that cure was, whatever was manufactured,
was temporary.
Was only temporary. So anyone
who Magneto is a powerful enough mutant that the cure doesn't work on him, yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. But we're just going to go with the fact that whatever the cure was, because of the manufacturing and all the other stuff, it can only be temporary and its effects can only last for so long. Now, for Charles, when he was teaching the class at the beginning of the movie, before he got interrupted with that train of thought when he saw the clouds outside, he was actually talking about being able to do that. So
I still don't like it, though. Like, honestly, I don't.
And this is the thing. Because I know you haven't seen The Wolverine yet. But there are a lot of things in this film that actually carry over into the Wolverine movie. Not Origins, because that's obviously way before all these events. But the Wolverine actually takes place years after this movie.
Well, when we get there, I will find out. But let's talk about Rogue. I think the only, like, there's so many opportunities to actually have arcs for these characters over the course of the trilogy. Maybe it's because I've been spoiled by MCU movies where, like, at least the Captain America trilogy was very consistent. But here's the thing. This movie kind of started with Rogue in a lot of ways. Yes, it started with Charles and Eric, but it also started with Rogue. So Rogue's arc should have been about accepting her powers and maybe learning to control them. Because in the first movie, she's scared of her powers. In the second movie, we actually see her using her powers for the first time of her own choice to do something good. The third arc of this would have been her rejecting the cure in order to be a hero, or, you know, like, there's so many things you could have done. Storm could have had a much bigger arc of, like, becoming a leader, which we sort of see hints of that in X2 that should have carried over more into X3. And the other movies sort of did this where there's an arc for the relationship between Charles and Eric, but it was also poorly handled, so we'll get to that when we get to that. This movie, I said this earlier, you really should have just let Jean stay dead. I know that everybody knows the Phoenix story, and I know it's iconic, but dear God, this should have either been the Phoenix saga or about the cure. It should never have been both. And I think the cure story, which is the majority of the story, if you cut Jean out of this movie works a lot better. Because Jean is annoying and unnecessary in this movie. She does nothing to further the plot. She's just there to annoy me and everybody else. And that's not an attack on Femke Jensen. She's amazing. It's an attack on shit writing. I remember as a kid really liking this movie. Because, you know, I was a kid. I didn't really think too hard about it. But this movie was not well received. It's still not a great movie. Like, it's an okay movie. Like, I'll freely admit that. But this movie, and I know it had a lot going against it, constant director switches and rewrites, and I think at one point the use of the Brooklyn Bridge happened in the middle of the movie, then when the director came in, he changed it to the end of the movie. Like, there's a lot of rewrites and shenanigans happening, but unfortunately this movie needed more. Like, if you're gonna focus on, like, I think honestly, Bobby has the best arc in this movie. He starts as a student and becomes an X-Man. Because in the first movie, like, granted, we don't see the X-Kids do anything in the second movie except Rogue flies a jet, which is kind of annoying. And Bobby freezes his mom's tea, but, like, it's an arc. Like, this movie, like, if you're going to plan a trilogy, you need to plan a trilogy. But I know it was the early 2000s, movies, yada, yada, yada. See what I have in my notes here. But I was just kind of... The Wolverine Jean Scott love triangle was completely annoying and a complete waste. I know I said this in the other two reviews, but this is just fact at this point. Cyclops really, like, I know they had to reduce the role, but again, you could have sent him on some kind of, like, maybe he finds out he has a brother and is going to that, so you kind of can take him out of the movie. Or say that, like, he needs to, like, find himself again. That would have been so much better. Storm's role was expanded and she becomes team leader, which is something that does happen in the comics, but I wish, like, it would have been handled better. So I said this before, I refuse to call Callisto Callisto because she's not Callisto. She shares literally nothing with the character of the same name. And I guess the fight between her and Storm was supposed to harken to that, but it doesn't in any way, because the fight between Callisto and Storm in the comics happens without powers. It happens, it's very rough. It's very even sexual. Like, it's very rough hand-to-hand combat. It's very rugged. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, this is, it's stupid. Peter, they had the chance to really do more with Colossus, and, like, I wish, like I said, here's the thing. If you cut Jean out of this movie, you can now focus more on Peter and Kitty and the teens and, like, the dynamics and Hank. And, like, you, like, if you cut Jean out of this movie would be so much better. But Jean really drags this movie down. But we don't get to be happy with the X-Men movies for a while because, as Michael stated, next we have to dive into Origins.
Here's the thing. Like I said this, you know, X-Men is a series of trilogies. You have the original trilogy, which we just finished up. You have the Wolverine trilogy.
Shitlogy.
Which interweaves along with the new X-Men trilogy.
Annoyingly so, then, but yes.
And then there's Dark Phoenix. But yeah, you've
always watched that.
Dark Phoenix?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you've only seen X-Men Origins Wolverine, correct? You haven't seen the Wolverine or Logan yet.
I saw Old Man Logan. The only one I haven't seen is the one in Japan.
Okay.
Yes. Like, okay, look. Here's full confession time. I cannot stand Wolverine. He is the single most overrated X-Men that ever walked the Earth of 616. Like, and also he tried to kill my favorite character, so I don't appreciate that ever. And he was a kid. So, like, there's times where Wolverine is well-written and I can like him, but generally speaking, I can't stand him. Like, he's just so irritating, and he overshadows everything else, and it's just annoying. And it's not, like, a criticism of Hugh Jackman or anything like that. It's just an annoying character. An overrated character.
You okay?
And that is where I'm at. Those are my feelings. So, with that, let me tell you about where you can find my lovely self on the social medias.
Hold on. Time out.
All right. That's all right. You didn't tell us how this movie did yet.
Calm your horses. Man, that's an old, old saying right there. Calm your horses.
All right there, Grandpa. Why don't you get you in your little carriage and, you know, ride on home.
So this film, X-Men The Last Stand, clocked in at 1 hour and 44 minutes.
Jesus, this movie isn't even 2 hours long? Yikes.
And it got a 6.7 out of 10. Compared to the first two, which were both a 7.4.
Valid. This movie is inferior to those.
So, now you can go on with the next, your spiel.
All right, so it is always Geeky Captain on Instagram, Geeky Kaplan on Twitter, geekr101.tumblr.com, and of course, geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com.
All right.
And of course, here.
Yeah. And of course, thankfully, now that the illegally parked car in my parking lot, which is actually blocking my car's car alarm, has finally finished going off. Was a distracting thing. You can find me on the Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. I've been doing a lot more on Twitch. I'm actually grinding my way to becoming a Twitch affiliate. I'll explain to Sasha what that means after we finish recording.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I'm almost there, actually, which is great. And then, of course, everything's at txhthockey.com, and for this show specifically, /nerdy-notions. Sasha, take it out.
And with that, thank you to our -165 listeners. We hope you appreciated the time I spent painstakingly surviving through this film. And please join us next time as we suffer through X-Men Origins Wolverine.